Groan. With every second, I felt my mind gaining control, shaking off the influence of the Minax. This was what I had come to do. Destroy the curse. No! Rasmus used his frost to knock me back. I hurled a blast of heat at him that sent him careening across the room, his head hitting the wall before he slumped to the floor. I turned back to the throne, letting my heat build, but the throne clawed at my heat, trying to pull it away from me, its very nature designed by Fors to weaken and destroy Fireblood. "You can do this, Ruby," Arcas said. "Don't hold anything back. Let go." There was a moment of terrible doubt, when every past failure came back to me. My village, my mother, my early attempts at harnessing my fire, how I'd let the Minax control me, the fact that it had persuaded me to kill Arcas just moments ago. But I was stronger than that. I hadn't let it rule me. Even as I felt the shadow presence in my mind, I was in control. My gifts, whether fire or darkness, were no longer wild. They were mine to command. "Arcas," I breathed, "cover yourself with ice." I heard the crackle of ice forming and saw, out of the corner of my eye, that Arcas had first sent a thick sheet of ice to cover his brother, who lay slumped on the floor, then surrounded himself with ice. And finally I let go. My heart beat once, twice, and I was filled with the terrible pressure of countless sunsets. Orange seared my eyelids, white fire engulfing me in torturous waves. It was 100 times hotter than the flames Arcas had rescued me from when I had burned my clothes by the Abbey stream. It was like being dropped into bubbling lava. I focused on the black outline of the throne. It still tried to siphon away my heat, a churning, insistent pull that felt as if it were tugging my heart right out of my chest. But I was no ordinary Fireblood. Whether I was born for this destiny or not, I alone had managed to control the Minax inside me. I could do this. Pulling up every thought of heat and fire in my mind and heart, I let the excruciating pressure build inside me until it was unbearable. Then I let it all explode into the throne. The blast sent me flying backward to slam against an icy pillar. Dazed, I saw that the throne was only half melted, and I repeated the same process. Let the heat build, the way Grandmother had taught me. Harness it, the way Brother Thistle had taught me. Let go, the way Arcas had taught me. Again and again I poured heat, pushed against its resistance, let my power build, and released it with a heady confidence I'd never felt before. A sweat poured down my face and my hands shook. I shouted with the effort of forcing out so much heat. Finally, the remaining ice of the throne swelled like an overfilled cask and then burst into a cloud of tiny droplets that hissed and steamed and filled the air with rivulets of light. The Minax swirled inside me, reeling at the sight of the bare space where the throne had stood, its home for 1,000 years. I felt its confusion, its brief sense of loss. But its feelings shifted to elation as it realized the freedom of living inside me instead. It settled into me, pushing at the edges of my consciousness. There was a sound like shattering glass. Arcas was smashing through the protective ice that had kept him safe from my fire. He came to my side, and I dimly heard him calling my name, felt his hands on my shoulders, but my consciousness was disappearing, like grains of sand being sucked into the sea. The voice of 1,000 bells spoke, each word resonating with excruciating triumph. "My true vessel, you have freed me. We will always be one now." As the darkness expanded in my chest, I realized it hadn't been using its full power on me before. It had let me destroy the throne because it wanted me to. I had been part of its plan, and now it was growing, consuming my identity, my very self. I needed help, Someone who had power greater than my understanding. Someone with golden hair and eyes who had helped Arcas before. Someone I had seen when I was lost in the blizzard white woods. If that had really been the seer, the prophetess who had healed Cirrus, I needed her help now. Sage, I said, some part of my spirit, some part that knew more than my mind, reaching out, help me. The voice from my vision spoke in my ear. To be filled with light, you need only to make a choice. Choose to forgive yourself. Choose to love. Her words lent me strength to struggle harder against the shadows. I willed myself to focus on things that were from the light. Love and hope and healing. New beginnings and forgiveness. The life I wanted to live, rather than the pain and guilt of my past. I pictured my mother, smiling and proud, grandmother at her side as they beckoned and welcomed me into an embrace. Love was a purifying force, like fire. I embraced it. Blinding golden light filled me. A scream pounded in my ears, an inhuman cry of agony, and then the darkness that had been inside me snapped free, like a clothesline that had been cut, sending all the sheets whipping into the wind. I would have fallen, but Arcas held me upright, pulling me against his chest. The Minax hovered above us. It tried to seep back into me, but I filled myself with every loving thought, keeping the light steady and bright. The shadow beast flickered from opaque to transparent, clearly struggling to keep its solid form. It shivered forward and retreated, as if wanting to come back to me, but knowing it couldn't. Movement caught my eye. Rasmus had smashed through the ice and was crawling across the floor toward us. He was trembling, his face a sickly grey, but his eyes pure blue and filled with pain. "Come back to me, Minax," he said, hoarsely. He looked so weak I had no sense of fear of the once powerful king. "You can't let it merge with you," I said. "I felt its full power. If you invite it in, it will erase who you are completely. You can't survive." He shook his head. "I'm dying anyway." He raised his arms. "Come, Minax, my only friend, return to me." The shadow beast only hesitated for a moment before moving toward Rasmus. Arcas leaped toward him. "Raz, no!" Even as Arcas reached for his brother, the darkness had filled Rasmus, turning his eyes black once again as he breathed a sigh of relief, his lips curving in a shaky smile. "Nothing matters but power," he whispered. Then his brows drew together, and he threw his head back in agony. Veins stood out against his light skin, the blue turning black like oil. The veins spread out like tiny tributaries and streams, connecting and swelling. Rasmus screamed and clawed at himself, staring at the ceiling as if searching for some hope of rescue. He convulsed violently, then fell limp against the floor as the Minax flowed back into the air, hovering above us again. It looked stronger, more opaque and solid. It moved toward Arcas, and I threw myself in front of him, my hands out. "Sage, protect us," I said, under my breath. The Minax shook in a way that mimicked laughter. "I don't need this one. The king who fought my influence when he took the throne. I have fed on another king. That will sustain me until I find my next host. Though you are my true vessel, daughter of darkness, when despair fills you, when everyone you love is gone, we will be one again. Remember me with this." Something seared the skin near my left ear. And then I felt the presence of the Minax leave. The world spun and righted itself. I sucked in a painful breath. I was on all fours on the stone floor. I tried to speak, but my throat felt dry and shredded. I opened my eyes and found myself staring into twin chips of ice, a myriad of colours from a warm summer lake to a cold winter morning.
"Is it you, Ruby?"
Arcus said my name quietly, a caress of breath. "Yes, the Minax is gone," I said. "For now."
"Thank Tempest you're all right."
He gathered me into his arms. I tucked my head into the space between his neck and shoulder. After a few minutes, his head turned toward his brother's still form. His breath shuddered against my neck.
"He was my brother."
"I know. I'm so sorry." For months I had dreamed of killing Rasmus, but Arcus had wanted me to cure him, and I hadn't been able to. I held Arcus as tightly as I could while he trembled, his tears cold against my collarbone. For long minutes, I just stroked his hair. I was amazed at Arcus's capacity for love, even after such betrayal. When he grew quiet, I pressed my lips to his cheek. The sun had slipped behind the mountain. Weak light filtered into the throne room, making the dust motes dance. The shadows were growing longer, but they were just shadows now. The room felt different. The evil presence in the throne was gone.
"There are things that must be dealt with," said Arcus, blowing out a long breath. "My forces won the battle, but there are those who will look unfavorably on what happened here. They could accuse me of killing my brother to take power."
I didn't mention that there was a moment in the arena when I had thought the same, that Arcus had been after the power of the throne. "But you didn't kill him."
"They won't necessarily believe that," he said. "And I need to convince those loyal to my brother that they owe me allegiance. It'll be no easy task."
"I wish I could help. But as you said before, I'm not loved in these parts." He smiled crookedly and touched my cheek.
"You are, by some."
Something painfully joyful and light flared through me. I closed my eyes in an overflow of feeling and pushed my cheek into his palm, pressing his hand there with mine. Chapter 29. A torch bobbed into view. Morella stood in the doorway.
"Where's Raz?"
she asked, but it was clear from her pained expression that she suspected the answer. Arcus gestured to his brother's limp form. Morella put a hand to her heart as she stared at him. Her eyelids flickered and closed. No matter what Rasmus had threatened, I had to remember that she had known him all her life.
"I'm sorry," I said softly to her.
"You destroyed the throne, as you were meant to do," said Morella. Her voice strained. She took a few shuddering breaths, making a visible effort to compose herself. Then she made a frustrated gesture to the doorway.
"Stop hovering, Father. You don't want the new king to think you a coward."
Lord Eustathius moved into the room, bowing to Arcus and looking slightly lost. Morella moved to light more of the torches on the wall, illuminating the spot where the throne had sat for untold generations. There was nothing left but a blackened outline of where it had been. The room seemed cavernous without that menacing presence. I tried not to look at Rasmus's body, focusing on Morella instead.
"Morella, Rasmus said you paid the captain to take me to Black Creek Prison. Is that true?"
She hesitated before spreading her hands in an open gesture.
"Forgive me, Ruby. It was all I could do for you at the time. I couldn't stop the raids, but at least I could make sure Captain Drake kept any Firebloods he found away from the king."
"Why would you say such a thing?" her father demanded, his cheeks looking more sunken than I remembered,
his hands unsteady at his side.
"You've just admitted to treason!"
Morella wore a wry look.
"I don't think this king will mind that I tried to save Ruby from the king's hatred. Do you, King Aurelius Arcanus? Or am I to call you Arcus now?"
Arcus shifted, one hand coming to rest on my shoulder in a possessive gesture.
"You always called me by the name Arcanus, and I don't expect you to stop now. And I won't fault you for trying to protect Fireblood. But why would you do that?"
"I've always had a particular interest in the prophecies of Drew, as well as the history of our people and the history of Fireblood. One of the texts said that a powerful Fireblood would destroy the cursed throne. Though I can assure you, no one here believed this throne cursed besides Brother Thistle and me. I sensed it was evil from the time I was a child."
"Then where are all the others?" I asked, my voice catching. "The Firebloods you saved."
Her eyes grew shadowed. "I'm afraid most were already gone, fled or killed by the time the captain agreed to work on my behalf. You were the only one he found. I thanked Fors for that miracle."
"He killed my mother, Morella."
She turned her face away.
"I hadn't thought he would be so brutal. I'm sorry, Ruby."
She looked at me again, her gaze contrite, almost pleading.
"But at least I saved you. And when you were brought here, I made sure Rasmus gave you a chance to fight. You defeated every opponent. And I knew you were the one the books talked about. The one who could control the darkness instead of succumbing to it."
A smile lit her face, making her even prettier.
"Now we are like sisters, aren't we? I'll never forget how you destroyed the throne, and you must never forget how I helped you."
The shock and exhaustion were finally hitting me. I could barely process what Morella was saying, much less how I felt about it. My stomach flipped, and I groaned and pressed a hand to it as my head went light. I heard Arcus ask Morella to fetch a healer, and her footsteps fade from the room, followed by her father's, his chastising voice echoing down the corridor. My eyes fell on the empty space where the throne had sat. The Minax had hovered there, triumphant, and said it would come back for me when I was weakest. When everyone I loved was gone.
Hadn't enough been taken? My mother, my home, months of my life?
All that was left was Arcus. No matter how I had tried to close myself against him, he'd become a necessity to me. Losing him was too horrible to contemplate.
"What's that?"
said Arcus, his fingers feathering over the tender skin near my ear.
"It looks like a heart. A small black heart.
It must be a burn." But I knew that the Minax had marked me. Sickness twisted my stomach. I couldn't think about that right now. All I wanted was to bask in comforting arms. Arcus sucked in a breath as he touched my cheek, drawing his fingers away quickly.
"Ruby, you're burning up. Even for a Fireblood, you're wickedly hot. We need to get you into water."
I nodded and pushed up to stand, but the world tinted like a spinning top, and I was pitched from its surface and sent into the black sky. I moaned and pushed at the hand that mopped my forehead with a cold cloth. I hated cold. I wanted to burn. I was fire. A sigh.
"You've always been stubborn. Now I fear it'll be the death of you."
I fought through the heaviness that fogged my mind and opened my eyes. A lined face and hooked nose swam into view. He smiled, displaying a few missing teeth. The tufts of white hair on his mostly bald head shone like filaments in the sunlight. With his beatific expression, he looked like a messenger of the gods. And since I knew Brother Gamut was dead, "This is the afterworld?" I asked, my voice as rough as quarry rock.
"If you were dead, would you be sponged with cold water, which you hate so much?"
My senses returned in a rush. My throat hurt, my skin hurt, my eyes felt as if they were full of sand.
"It depends," I croaked. "The gods might be punishing me."
He chuckled. "That's all too likely."
Tears filled my eyes. I was alive. Brother Gamut was alive. If the captain had lied about Brother Gamut, maybe he had lied about the others too. With a grunt, I pushed up and threw my arms around his fine-boned frame. "You don't know how glad I am to see you safe."
He laughed and sucked in a breath.
"Your skin is burning hot, Ruby."
I released him and fell back onto the soft mattress, putting my hands to my spinning head. I finally registered where I was, in a room I'd never seen before, with gauzy curtains around the bed and heavy drapes at an open window.
"Where am I?"
"In the Queen's old room." He gave his gap-toothed grin and waved to a door in the wall. "With a door to Arcus's room. It's lucky for you that I'm so happy to see both of you, or I might question the prudence of his choices." Before I could reply to his teasing, a wave of nausea hit.
"I'm going to be sick."
"There's nothing left in your stomach but water. That's all you've been able to keep down. You've been through a trauma, and your body is just now starting to heal. I've been sitting with you since I arrived, talking to you in hopes that you would fully wake. I am glad you finally decided to do so."
"How many days?"
"Arcus sent for us before he entered the city. We arrived the day after you became ill. I've been at your side for 3 days."
"And before that, you were at the Abbey? Safe?"
His wild white brows drew together. "Most of us are unhurt. After the soldiers came..." He met my eyes and sighed. "We had thought Brother Lack was unaware of the exit through the catacombs. We must have been wrong. Once the soldiers knew about you, they questioned us. But Arcus returned quickly, and he and Brother Thistle unleashed their frost on the soldiers. Those of us who are young and able helped fight."
"And you won?"
"We escaped. After that, Arcus left to bring his supporters to the castle. The rest of us hid in the caves in the mountainside, until we received word from Arcus that it was safe to return to the Abbey. But he wanted Brother Thistle here when it was all over, someone he could trust to advise him, and I offered to come provide healing to anyone injured in battle."
"Brother Gamut, you won't look me in the eyes. What aren't you telling me?"
He shook his head, the words coming out slow and laboured.
"We lost a few of our brothers and sisters in the fight."
He told me the names of his lost friends, including the jovial Brother Peel. I held his hand tightly as he spoke, tears streaming down my cheeks.
"The rest of us are safe, though," he assured me.
"Sister Clove's arm was broken, but it's healing. We all help her more now."
"And so will I said, sitting up and taking a deep breath. "As soon as I'm well, I'm going back with you. The Abbey is my home now."
"I'm glad you'd call the Abbey your home. I've had to drink many cups of my own tea to ease my worries about you."
"No need to worry any more. But tell me more, please. I need to know what I've missed."
He patted my hand again, withdrawing it quickly with a grimace. "Only if you promise to let me sponge your face and neck. Even firebloods are not meant to burn all the time." He continued to dab my forehead, cheeks and neck with the cool cloth as he spoke. I interrupted often, and he answered my questions, sometimes urging me to be quiet so he could finish a thought. I tried, but patience is just not in my nature. While I drowsed in my fevered state, Arcus had convinced most of the nobility that he was the rightful king. It didn't take much convincing that a curse had been darkening the nation, as people had felt that truth in their hearts for a long time.
But Arcus still had to deal with a nation that had long been spread too thin by war. He had ordered his armies to be withdrawn from neighboring countries, and had sent ambassadors to begin the long process of mending ties with kings and queens. It would take time, Brother Gamut said, for people to forgive. The Minax's dark appetites had been embodied in the form of the Frost King. It would be a long road for the new king to regain trust. "But is he all right?" I asked anxiously. "How's he dealing with his brother's death? Brother Gamut, you should have seen him. He looked broken."
"I know, child. I see his sadness. He's not himself."
As we sat in silence, the door opened and Arcus came in, looking at Brother Gamut. He wore no hood, so his eyes were clearly visible. Today they were the colour of a frozen lake dusted with snow. His expression was grim, shadowed, his cheeks hollow, as if he hadn't slept well in weeks. He looked as if he'd aged years in the past few days.
"I'll watch her for a while, brother," Arcus said heavily, closing the door behind him. "The coronation isn't for a few hours yet."
His eyes widened as they settled on me.
"She's awake!"
"You can talk directly to me now," I pointed out.
"Ruby,"
he breathed, moving his broad-shouldered frame so carefully toward me that I wondered if he expected me to fly away like a startled bird. It both touched and amused me to think that after everything I'd survived and everything I'd done, he could still think of me as fragile. He slid his cold hand under my palm. I shivered, but it was the sensation of his touch, not the cold, that ran up my arm and brought goosebumps to my skin.
"How do you feel?"
he asked softly. I tried to pull my hand away, sure it must be uncomfortably hot in his. He tightened his grip. "Like an overcooked rabbit," I answered. His eyes crinkled with amusement, making him look closer to his own age again.
"You're the fire. Muffle your flames."
"Ah, but that requires self-control, and we both know
you have very little of that,"
he completed with a crooked smile that did nothing to lower my temperature. Despite his light words, there were signs of tension in the line of his jaw, the set of his shoulders.
"Are you all right?" I asked. "Brother Thistle has been hovering over me like a mother hen. If he persists, I'm going to lock him in the keep."
"He loves you."
"And I love him too."
His face grew serious, and I wondered if he wanted to say something more. But then his eyes flicked to Brother Gamut, who sat grinning happily from his perch on the brocade chair, and he seemed to think better of it. "I'm so sorry, Arcus," I said, my fingers twisting together on the quilt. "I should never have gone into the throne room without you. If I had waited, maybe..." He shook his head, his brows lowering.
"Nothing was your fault," he paused. "There was a small service yesterday. We buried him in his ceremonial robes, with some of his favourite items from when he was a child."
I nodded, and that was probably how Arcus preferred to remember him, as the boy he once was.
"We were all saved because of you."
"Then why do I feel like I failed?" I asked, looking away. "The Minax is loose now, unhampered by the throne. Who knows what chaos it's capable of now that I freed it?"
Brother Gamut, perhaps sensing that the air had grown thick, cleared his throat and stood.
"I need to fetch some herbs to make your special tea. Would you like that?"
"Very much," I said sincerely. "You have no idea how much I've missed it."
The monk made a quick bow to Arcus and shuffled from the room. When the door had shut behind him, Arcus sat in the chair, his hand still holding mine.
"You did not fail," he said. "You rid the castle of a curse."
"But the throne brought the Frost King power." I met his eyes. "You'll be weaker now without it." His eyes narrowed as he considered what I'd said.
"The throne did give the king power, but it wasn't always used justly.
It had been growing dark for a long time, at least since my father's reign. My own father was terribly cruel to my brother. Rasmus told me. I slid my fingers into his and squeezed. He looked down at our hands. So I intend to use not only my frost, but my ability to speak to people, to persuade them to think as I do.
I grinned, because you're so loquacious. One side of his mouth tilted up, puckering the scar.
I suddenly longed to trace it with my finger.
I used to be known for my persuasive arguments.
We sat in peaceful silence for a minute. Why didn't you tell me who you really were? I asked. His lips twisted. He met my eyes, his own intense.
It was a secret that, if exposed, could mean the death of the monks. I was using the abbey as a place to hide, a secluded and safe place to live while I built up my supporters. Rasmus might have taken his wrath out on the order. I couldn't risk that. Even if I knew I could trust you, and Ruby, I did really come to trust you. It was more a question of what you might reveal if you were captured.
I understand, I said. I care about the monks too. He sat back and stroked my hair with his hand, then lifted my chin until my eyes met his.
Ruby, I want you to know I'd changed my mind. I was going to tell Brother Thistle we had to find another way, but then...
His hand convulsed.
I was in agony when I returned to the abbey and found that you'd been taken. I followed, but you were too far ahead. Once you reached the castle, I needed a strong force to fight Rasmus's soldiers.
And you did it. You won.
Things looked bleak until the champions declared they were for me.
My affection for Bracca grew tenfold.
Good. They've been released from any servitude under my rule, Ruby. They are free men and women now.
I beamed up at him, bursting with pride for the new king. Arcas smiled back, and my heart kicked up a fuss at the glorious sight.
I thought you'd like that, he said,
his hands sliding around mine. I screwed up my courage and told Arcas how the Minax had called me its true vessel. His hand tightened on mine as I spoke.
We will not let it take you, he said, his voice rough with feeling. I won't let it, Ruby, I swear.
I squeezed his hand because he meant to comfort me. But how could we fight something as ephemeral as darkness?
You look tired, he said more softly. I should let you rest.
Reluctantly, I let his hand go. You need to prepare for your coronation. I wish I could come.
He shook his head, his look stern. You're too ill. When your fever comes down, you can do what you like. Until then, no visitors, and no leaving this room.
I remembered telling him once that he could never control me, which he'd find out to his detriment if he tried. But he wasn't like his brother, exerting control over people for the pleasure of it. Arcas was imperious, but it came from the need to protect. And just then, tired and battered as I was, I didn't mind.
You're very kingly when you give commands, I said, unable to keep my lips from twitching. It makes me want to defy you just for the sake of it.
His eyes danced.
And risk the charge of treason. Do you want to end up back in a cell, Lady Firebrand?
I mocked his stern look with one of my own. That's nothing to jest about.
He grinned and put a hand to his chest. Your eyes scorch me. I wish I were half as frightening as you when I get angry, my little inferno.
You're plenty frightening when you want to be.
His grin softened. Not to you, I hope.
My pulse reacted to the tenderness in his eyes. Only when I thought you were going to sacrifice yourself for me. How could you? I looked down, then back up, fighting shyness. It would kill me never to see your handsome face again. Suddenly, he was crushing me to him, his chest rising and falling on a deep breath, before he put me gently back against the pillows. The once cold blue eyes simmered as they met mine. "Thank you, Lady Firebrand," he said, and his voice sounded as if it were coated with rust. "I will take those words to bed with me every night to comfort me." Images of his bare chest covered by a sheet brought heat to my cheeks. He planted a kiss on my forehead and started to rise. "Arcas," I said, still keeping one of his hands captive. "Someone told me that affairs between fire and frost never end well." I didn't say more, but he seemed to understand the question I wanted to ask. Would our end be as tragic as that of the Frost King who married a Fireblood Queen? He paused, and my heart stuttered. But then he sat back on the bed next to me, looking more thoughtful than concerned. "I doubt our kind have been together often enough to answer that question. I'm convinced the throne had a hand in the death of the Fireblood Queen. I don't fear your heat, and you don't fear my frost. And besides..." As he leaned in, I slid closer and lifted my chin. He dipped his head and pressed a kiss so blistering in intensity to my lips that his cold burned hotter than fire. It didn't hurt, but it did burn, and not in a way I minded. My blood woke up, and my fever spiked, and my mouth went bone dry. Little shivers ran from my lips down to every part of my body. He was gentle, but unrestrained at the same time, as if he was showing me something, giving me something of himself. It made me feel raw and new and precious. I gave myself back, showing him with my lips and my hands, on his cheeks and in his hair, and on his beautiful scars that I needed him in ways I was no longer afraid to share with him. When we were both breathless, he broke away and smiled. I smiled back. And then he put his lips gently back to mine, his fingertips under my chin. "When it comes to you," he whispered, "I like to be burned."
This has been a Hachette audio production of Frostblood, written by Ellie Blake, read by Jennifer English. Frostblood is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by Ellie Blake. Audio production copyright 2017 by Hodder & Stoughton. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.